Hi, I'm Mansadi Sipeka for All Africa, and welcome to the first of many discussions around what peace-building practitioners are doing to help end conflict on the African continent, where violence and instability have changed the lives of millions of people. Our first journey is through South Sudan, the Mozambique, and lastly, the Sahel region. But we first have to understand what it means to build peace, and where it seems almost hopeless. Woman peace and security practitioner and executive director of the African Leadership Center, Dr. Shivaya Busumanyoni, has been in the business of building peace on the continent in her role as executive director of the African Leadership Center and as a peace practitioner for decades. Shivaya, welcome. So Shivaya, before we get into the area of South Sudan, if you can just explain to us exactly what is a peace practitioner?
Good morning, everyone, and good morning to my fellow panelists. Good morning, Mansadi. So maybe just to clarify, so I'm currently the director of the African Leadership Center, and I also work in the area of women, peace and security. Specifically, that's my own kind of research area and area of practice.
Sure.
I think as a, I don't know, I wouldn't quite call myself a peace practitioner, but more someone who has been working in the area of women, peace and security, both in a research capacity, but also in practice. So directly on the ground and working on issues that relate to women in conflict, how women are affected by conflict, but also women's participation in conflict. And that's linked to the work I do at the work we do at the African Leadership Center, which is a center it's a research and a training center. It's our focus is on young people, young Africans, who we see as the next generation of leaders on the continent and globally, dealing with issues that sit at the nexus of peace, security, and development. And we do that in a number of ways. But one of our flagship programs is a program specifically focused on young African women in peace and security. And that program involves a year's training of academic and non-academic training in the field of peace, security, and development. Many of these young African women are coming from conflict-affected settings or contexts, or they are, you know, they live in insecure contexts or contexts where there is violence or violent conflict. And so I think going back to your question of what it means to be a peace practitioner, I think that it's very broad. It can be defined in a number of ways, but I think it's essentially anyone who is working or contributing to further peace or stability or well-being in a society, furthering the freedom from the threat of violence, the freedom from the insecurity of either the physical being or any other aspect of the of human life, I think, essentially. And I think it's people who are working together with others to ensure that, as we say at the African Leadership Center, that people are able to make choices about how they will live well and live long.
And I know you mentioned the projects that you are currently doing. How have they, or your work with around the peace sector, shaped what is happening on the continent right now?
You know, that's again a difficult question to answer, because how do you attribute the small contribution you're making in an entire continent, a continent as diverse and as rapidly moving and changing as the African continent? And that's especially true when we think about issues of peace and insecurity on our continent. I mean, every day at any point, you know, something is changing. I think the contribution that our center has made, really, we have been around for about 10 to 13 years in different iterations. And we have trained over 124 young Africans who sit across the globe in various institutions, be they academic, be they multilateral, government, civil society, research, and scholarly institutions. And many of these people are contributing in, you know, whether someone is working in the office of the ombudsperson at the World Bank or is an ambassador for their country to another country or is in the military or is in a peacekeeping mission, of which many of our alumni are at the moment. So they're contributing to the peace agenda, the security agenda across the globe, I think, in different ways. I mean, some at the moment, we have two alumni, for instance, who are involved in various ways in some of the peace agreement mechanisms in South Sudan. You know, others who are who have been in peace missions in Darfur and other places. So I think our work really is to provide the foundation what many of our alumni go on to do with what they have been trained in, they apply in the various settings where they find themselves.
So let's move on to the topic of South Sudan. We know that there was a recent agreement signed between President Salva Kiir and his opposition leader, Riek Machar. And we know that past agreements have failed or have ended in a lot more conflict than peace. The one that triggered the civil war in 2013 led to about 400,000 people losing their lives and millions being displaced. So the recent agreement that was signed, Salva Kiir himself said, "Peace is finally here." Now, in your opinion, Shabai, do you believe is close for the South Sudanese people?
This question is interesting in the sense that I don't think you can necessarily give a yes or no answer. How close or how far peace is, I think what we do know is that we are yet to be at a place where the South Sudanese can say with certainty that they know that they can live well and they can live long. I think while the peace agreement that was eventually signed, the revitalized agreement that was eventually signed, has ushered in a period of relative absence of big battles, large-scale battles between what we could identify as government forces and the opposition, as you will, there is still an absence of peace. There's still no guarantee that the majority of South Sudanese are free from the threat of violence at any given time. And I think we just have to look, especially at the situation of women and children. I think the fact that we have high numbers of sexual violence that still continues, and also in certain parts of the country, localized conflict, or what is called oftentimes as intercommunal violence, which has underlying political linkages that linked to the bigger political conflict that has been going on since 2013. And there are numerous reports from numerous organizations that point to this. This issue is still an issue of concern on the agenda of the UN Security Council, even the African Union's Peace and Security Council. And so I think we cannot say that peace has finally come, especially if South Sudanese people themselves cannot say that with confidence.
So in your opinion, what would be the best peace-building strategy for the South Sudanese people? What is the way forward here?
You know, I think one of the biggest challenges when it comes to intervening or engaging in a context where the society is at war, in conflict with itself, one of the things that I think there's always a rush to have mediators, and mediators at a very high level from outside of the context. there's always a rush to create a peace table, a physical space around which those who wield the most power in the situation can sit around. Now, who are those who wield the most power? It's usually men. It's men with guns or men with access to guns. It's rarely ever the people who are most affected by this violence, who are most affected by the conflict. And very rarely are those people ever asked what they want, what they desire. And we call this establishing mutuality, right? So being able to understand what is it that the people who you would eventually lead, if you are a leader, what is it that they want, and how is it that we can get to that common goal together? I think in the case of South Sudan, my own opinion is that for many, many years, there has not been a sustainable way of understanding and getting to know what it is ordinary South Sudanese want and how and what they see as the best way to get to that place. There are many dialogues, there are many mediations, but when you look at who those involve, predominantly involves men, it involves men with guns and men with access to power and resources.
So the UN's Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan, they speak of civilians that are under serious threat, obviously, namely the women and the girls who are abducted, raped, sexually assaulted or enslaved or forcibly married. So what is the ALC's role in highlighting these atrocities?
So as I said to you again, you know, we are a research and training institution, so we are not so much... we wouldn't so much be highlighting those atrocities in the period as they happen, because we do more of training the people who would go to perhaps undertake investigations or documentation or participate in some of those mechanisms or processes where that kind of work is being done. However, we do, on the research side of what we do house data on peace. We have what we call the African Leadership Center Data Lab, which is a repository of data on peace and security on the African continent since 1960. And we have huge amounts of data that would also include data on this kind of thing. So any researcher, any African researcher doing any kind of work on this particular topic, for instance, would be able to access some of that data that we house. We also work in collaboration with various institutions or mechanisms where research is concerned. So we would not necessarily, you know, we wouldn't be like your Human Rights Watch or Amnesty who would, you know, put out press statements, etc., on these kinds of atrocities. But our work is more sort of in the background and providing, you know, it's part of the link or the chain in establishing the kinds of facts that would go into a report like that, that would say, you know, and it would be go into a report like that as secondary data, not necessarily ourselves doing the work.
I know this situation seems or appears bleak, but are there any positive outcomes to this to trying to build peace in the region?
I think certainly there are. And I think for me, what is the most exciting is the way that communities, activists within the local context have gained not only confidence, but how they innovate all the time. And this is the kind of information that we at the African Leadership Center try to excavate. We try to really focus on the lived realities and lived experiences of the people who come through our doors, and many of them coming from many of these contexts. And I think what we haven't seen enough of, and what we need to build on, is the practices, the strategies, the approaches, the knowledge generation and knowledge production of local actors in many conflict-affected contexts. Because women, for instance, last year in South Sudan, at the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, with lockdowns and many restrictions on movements, there were spikes, as there were in many other parts of the world, of gender-based violence, violence against women, etc. and to see how local activists came together to actually put pressure on the government to respond, to do something, but at the same time respond to the COVID pandemic, and also setting up, you know, groups and networks where information could travel very quickly and assistance could very quickly reach those who needed it. So I think there's a huge gap in terms of our knowledge on many of these innovations and actions that are being taken at a local level, and that needs to be highlighted. But that's something I would definitely celebrate.
Well, thanks so much for that, Shiva. I'd like to bring in David here. As we move on to the topic of Mozambique and the conflict that is happening there and what's been happening this current week. As we've seen on all the news agencies the past week, and especially this weekend alone, there's been several deaths and civilians are still missing, displaced civilians, intense fighting in the past week. It appears to mark an escalation of fighting amongst government forces, local rebels, and perhaps the participation of international extremists who are taking advantage of maybe the poverty and desperation of the region's people. I mean, as we sit here, I know the town of Parma is quite tense at the moment. And so, David Machinya, welcome. As I said earlier, recently, you are the South African researcher at Amnesty International. You wrote a piece calling on SADC leaders to urgently intervene in this violence, this violent extremism that's happening in Mozambique. I would just like to know, and obviously want to spend more time on this because it seems like Mozambique has pretty much just exploded over the past few days in terms of the violence. Why is the violence like it is?